Okay, this is the BB brushing her teeth intro for the computer club.
Can you hear her brushing her teeth?
It's why I brush my teeth.
We're doing it now, the day before computer club, because hopefully I'll be able to edit this together and put it out right before tomorrow's computer club, because we've waited till the last minute to do this.
That's our usual.
That's just the way it goes, right? Mm-hmm. What is today? Today is the first. The last computer club was...
last week.
That's a good answer. Last week. Last week was when? January 26th? That sounds right, doesn't it?
What day is it today?
The first...
of what?
Say that again.
February!
Very good. You know, it's Valentine's Day in 2 weeks, having absolutely nothing to do with it. Anyway, this is just us trying to do a quick intro that hopefully I can edit together and publish in the morning before the next computer club. This is Scott Stimson, your host.
This is Viviana Stimson, the daughter.
Brushing her teeth and wishing you well. This is the intro for January 26, 2021. Tech on!
Tech on.
Thanks, Bibi. Oh.
Not enough Star Wars yet?
What? Is that possible?
Echo stuff.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Judy,
morning.
Judy and I were just complaining about the cold, but with Canadians on board, it's kind of a like false complaint.
That it's the wind.
It is the wind.
So
right there.
Oh, you don't put yourself in the thing.
Okay.
Oh.
All right.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Well,
that shows the drum.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, that's very cool.
Okay, enough.
So you have the thing that goes around.
Morning, Chester.
Good morning.
Am I coming in clear? I think Bibiana's going to come join us again. She's got another day without screens, so she'll bring her computer and sit here amongst six screens.
Scott, what's your name? We can't remember.
Yesterday was Monday?
Yeah, was it a holiday?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay. What was your question, Bill?
What's your other daughter's name?
Emily.
Your older daughter. Emily. Yeah. Yeah,
Maria Emily Stimson Marquez. And she's 15, and she is so 15. She's like that 15 going on 18. I can't do anything right, and she has no patience for any of us.
For the long haul, until she's probably 20-something.
One of my favorite comments that you might have heard me make it before, but it was that joke that when I was 18, my father knew nothing. And when I was 21, it was amazing how much he had learned in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I got my shot last weekend.
All right, Chester.
The joke's either... going around, Chester, is we're supposed to ask you, if did you grow a third nipple? Are you walking funny?
Do you have any superpowers?
But I, the experience was kind of interesting because it was at 11:30 at night at a very large stadium here in Phoenix. And the people that you made contact with there were unbelievably nice. They were so friendly and it just was it was a pleasure to be a part of the activity.
Cool.
Well, that's great. It's a funny description of getting a vaccine, though. It's almost like you expect a dance to be going on and on stage some music playing.
they said, take a deep breath, and I did, and never felt it. Just didn't even know what happened.
Well, that's awesome. Yuya was telling me this morning that they're getting prepared for 60 and older here in San Carlos. Or here in Guaymas, in this area. What's going to be happening, and this sounds crazy, so I don't know if this, don't take me on this as the final word, because this sounds like a plan that's going to get revisited before it happens. But they are going to come to a central location, Hey, come on in.
But here I am.
Hello. I was doing a little school project, but I'll chill with you guys for a bit.
You can't hear anything because you didn't bring your headset.
I didn't.
What was it you needed?
Oh, I was like, do you know where the vinegar is? Because they're making me put an egg in vinegar.
An egg in vinegar. You know what? There's a whole thing of vinegar.
That's what mommy told me. I have no clue where it is.
It's over by the bleach in the other bathroom next to the toilet. It's a
worse than the other bathroom.
It's clear vinegar. It looks like water in a plastic jug with a handle.
White vinegar, it's called.
White vinegar.
But hello, how are you guys?
Here, turn on. Now you can hear what they say. So are you still coming to join us?
I'm going to do that. Pause 101 Dalmatians, blink your head, and I'm glad they come
here. Okay.
Okay, back
to the... Broken computer too well, about it?
Yes.
Go back to the what their plan is in here in the area for the vaccine.
Yeah. Again, this sounds crazy. So I expect it to get revisited, but apparently they're going to send officials out to a public area. I don't know what that area is, and we're all supposed to go line up and get appointments.
Line up for appointments?
Yes. Oh. Yes. And all that says to me is that they must not have an online system ready to go for this. I have trouble believing this is the way it's going to work out, but this is what they're telling people right now.
And did she hear where the appointments are going to be?
I'm assuming in Eames, but that's a good question. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think all that's waiting to be found out.
I also read this morning that Putin has promised some doses to Mexico, which is a little scary.
That was a deal that I thought went down early with Russia, that we were going to be buying their vaccine.
Right. Well, that was on Mexico News Daily today.
Vaccine. Yep. I'm writing your question down so I can find information about it for us. Vaccine. Where to get your vaccine? Good morning, Pop.
Hi there.
How you doing? We're just getting started.
We're barely started, but great to see all you folks. Hello.
Terry, what's happening with vaccinations in Alaska?
Have you got yours yet?
Yes. It was an interesting experience because I could not figure out how to sign up for it. And your sister called up mom and said, if you just go to the school district, you don't even have to have an appointment. And I didn't believe it. But Sandy decided she was going to do it. So she went over there and called me and said, this is going to work if you come over and join me. Yeah, what happened? I got over there, and she had already gone inside the building. She'd been in a line outside. And so I mentioned to the guy that she was inside, and he said, well, let's get you in there. And they just bent over backwards to get me caught up with her.
Oh,
and
awesome.
So by the time, all the time we were done, we were sitting, doing wait. For, to see what the reaction was together. And then at that point, they used the time to schedule our next appointment. So it couldn't have been better. And I even wrote a letter to the editor and said that it was the school district employees doing it. It was absolutely amazing. The only complaint I had is nobody seemed to know how to sign up to get there.
Well, I was just telling the folks here that Yuya was telling me this morning that they've got this crazy, well, I think it's, I'm sorry, I shouldn't feed it with my own opinion, but I think it's crazy, this idea that they're going to send officials out to areas like San Carlos and take appointments by hand. So we're expected to go search them out and get our appointment for a vaccination.
All right. Well, it sounds just about as crazy as we're hearing about it everywhere else.
I guess that's a really good point. It's amazing to find out how unprepared this vaccination plan has been handed over to the new president, and to have the same kind of poor planning in this country kind of is par for everything. We have a president that didn't take this stuff seriously until, lo and behold, he's sick now.
Yeah.
Incidentally, every worker.
Did you miss me?
You got great timing. Look, Tata's here.
Hi, baby. I know.
Every worker.
Well, hello.
Had a computer pad, and they all told everything that they needed to know about you and your appointment and your email address. The time you got through it, you already had the hour and date of your next appointment.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, hopefully they have the vaccine for you.
Well, I think they will, because I think they're reserving for it.
I hope that's the case.
My experience in Nogales was very efficient. We went to a big recreation hall, good separation, different tents, handled very, very well, and we got our appointment for the next one.
So did you go to Nogales, Arizona then?
Yes. We signed up online. They got back to us within 2 days. They're doing 75 and older right now. But I understand that they're going to change that pretty quick to younger ages.
If you're here in Mexico expecting to get the vaccine, I'll just remind you it's 60 and older starting February, 50 and older starting in April, and 40 and older starting in May. I trailed off at the end because I realized none of you guys really care about the rest of the ages, probably.
What about 80 and older?
You are part of the 60 and older unless you're an essential worker. So they haven't cut it off. Like in the States, they've cut it off at 75, and here they haven't. It's everybody older than 60.
I was 60 and older 20 years ago.
Is Mom with you, Pop?
Yeah, she's here.
Hi, Mom!
So I want to tell you a quick little story about this getting a vaccination.
Okay.
We have folks living with us next door in the apartment upstairs that came in just to spend the winter last year. But, of course, then they ended up having to spend the summer and spend the winter now and so forth. And they're from a little village in Alaska called Aniak. But they've actually been just fine living here. They're not too disappointed. But he needs to have surgery. In fact, they were down in Seattle last week, and I guess they're going to have to return down there. So she came up and tried to find a place where he could get a vaccine shot right away. They ended up having to fly out to Bethel to get it done.
Really? They had to go back to Bethel?
They flew to Bethel. I see. It was so he could get both vaccines before the surgery.
Wow. So does that mean they had space for giving out vaccines in Bethel when they didn't here in Anchorage or there in Anchorage?
Don't know. It sounds like it. But they could get both vaccines out there. Of course, they're going to have to go back to Bethel to get the second one, too. But, yeah, I thought that was a little unusual to have to do that.
Yeah. But, well, especially if you never think about having to go to Bethel to do anything.
Yeah. Right. Well, the health department in Alaska put on a kind of a conference where they could explain how they were going to do this. It was, you know, all of us got online and listened to them, and it sounded so good, you know, how we would just get online then and sign up. Well, it turned out a lot of the people that signed up had their appointments either canceled or changed, and we never could find where you could actually sign up online. So it's really been a mess here, and we're listening to similar stories all around the country.
Yeah, it's sad. It feels like we've got plenty of time for to have gotten ready.
I would think so.
This is about the time I hit the streaming button, so let me do that and just say welcome. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. I am Scott Stimson.
And I am Vivi Honest.
And Vivi is joining us again because this week she's got another day without screens, and we ironically put her in front of 6 screens because we know it's not about screens, it's about teachers getting a break from these kids.
Yeah. They actually have a meeting as well tomorrow.
She's got the next 2 days off.
I like the sheepdog hairdo.
I can't control my hair. It works on its own.
So if you had any desire to have questions answered by a 13-year-old tech genius, she is the queen of our intros. If you've listened to any of our podcasts, she has joined me to introduce the San Carlos Computer Club as an audio experience for the last several weeks, probably 3 months now.
Woo!
And I see Kathleen and Linda have joined us as well. Good morning. Welcome. We're just getting started.
Good morning.
Your microphone is sounding awesome.
And well, now I get sent work anyways.
Oh, yeah, you're getting sent homework right
I
now?
I just got sent one, like, right now. I'm like, top 10 biggest issues in the world today. Choose one of the 10 biggest issues in the world. Poverty, religious, conflict, and war. Okay, that's enough.
That's enough, yeah. So this is schooling in the modern age. She's getting text messages of what her assignments are. And all we've been doing is catching up on COVID news and vaccination news and talking about how it's colder now than it was 2 hours ago because the wind stoked up. Very windy.
It's you don't know
I'm
cold.
Like, go out there and like.
Did you hear the Canadians say, you don't know cold?
Yes, minus 20 here with a wind.
Okay.
Yeah, my wife's like, it's supposed to go down to 5 degrees.
We went up to 5 last month. That was a nice day.
I was gonna say I'm
it's
gonna
probably
go out
snowing in
Nogales.
Like,
yeah, going in circles.
That's right. BB sets her bird outside every morning so it can enjoy the sun and be out in the weather. And the wind's been blowing. She's convinced she'll go out there and find his page just spinning around in circles.
You know, that did happen once. He was, like, swinging and spinning. He wasn't doing anything. He wasn't freaking out. He just sat in his food, and he was, like, acting like it was the best time of his life.
It's like a carnival ride.
Yeah, that's what I was treating it like. I'm like, no, you're going inside,
what
man.
Bird? What kind of bird?
It's a parakeet.
Oh.
You probably got pictures
so
of it somewhere.
I have so many pictures of him. And there's an album directly for him.
I don't mean to make the club all about BB, but I did want to show you guys. This is her computer.
My laptop.
this is her Chromebook computer. And I don't know if I'm going to have time to do it today because I've got two other computers in front of it. But we've got to replace this keyboard. Which
I broke it.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a water. Yeah, I took all your sister's commentary out of the intro.
I did something called spill a glass of water, the entire thing, on my computer.
And so Dad's got to figure out how to get all the water out of it, and the keyboard ended up not working. Two buttons.
No, three buttons.
Okay, three buttons.
Now it's like 4 to 5 buttons. It's a lot
to
of buttons.
To save... How many is it now?
Around like 4 to 5 buttons.
Okay, to save 4 or 5 buttons, this is what we have to replace.
Honestly, I feel like the main thing we actually have to replace is the A button, because that one doesn't work. The other ones, I can just erase it. The S just messes with the volume and the lighting.
Well, what you're not taking into consideration is that there's no way to replace just the S, the A buttons.
Look, ready? Oh, this is what my S does.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
It also messes my volume at times.
It's all connected, this whole thing. And it was hard to get because in COVID times, there's a real supply problem with mobile computing. And so not only was it hard to get, but it's going to be a lot of work to change because this is essentially the computer without the motherboard. So there's a motherboard that has to be taken out and put into this. There's a camera right here. There's a camera hole. There's a little webcam that's got to be put in here. We basically have to disassemble the entire bottom half and move it all over to this and then mount the screen on this because you spilled a cup of water.
I didn't mean to. I was in class and I was just drinking water. And next thing you know, my computer's wet. You know, devices okay. don't
you
really like water.
Modulate your volume because you're really loud.
I'm always loud.
You have to pay extra for a waterproof keyboard?
No, if only. If only. But you know, one thing, I mean, we may have actually made it worse because one of the things that I was thinking about, I don't know what you did after you spilled the water, but one of the things that you read now for if you spill water, and it was after you spilled it, so I couldn't have given you this advice before, okay? But one of the things that you should do if you spill water on your keyboard is nothing. You should not panic. You should not move the computer. There's a very good chance you own a computer that's been designed to let the water flow past all the critical components. And the only thing you can do is panic and jostle it and get that water somewhere it's not supposed to be. So one of the first advices that's given nowadays with modern computers is don't touch it. Turn it off. Take the battery out if you can. Maybe a hair dryer. But the first thing you do is you don't panic about it.
Yeah.
At some point, depending. We have, say again, Paul?
We have silicon skins for our keyboards.
Oh, that's a good suggestion, too. I don't know about your, you're not using, that's really common on Macintoshes. I thought you were using a PC.
Amazon.
Silicon skin for a standard size keyboard or for a very specific keyboard?
By model number.
Your model number, okay.
We should try to get that from my computer, just in case.
Well, the unfortunate thing with these Chromebooks is they are so small and light, I don't think we can stick a silicone skin over the keyboard.
It's very thin. I mean, you see through it.
We should look and see if there's something like that. I'm hoping it just serves as a learning experience. I've been waiting to do this work. Because what needs to be changed has such micro components, such fragile little wires that need to be disconnected from the motherboard, that I actually bought a new toolkit. So this is... So I can...
It's really bad. The volume is bad. There's background noise.
Hey, is somebody vacuuming? Nobody's vacuuming? Oh, wait. Is it over here? Hold on a second. No, it's definitely coming from our session. Can everybody mute for a moment?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Everyone should mute real quick.
Here, I'll even mute. Oh, whoever muted last got rid of it.
It was you.
Well, no, I'm not muted anymore. It's obviously not me.
Unmute again, and we'll do it again.
I'm back on.
Okay, slowly unmute.
It's only her second day, and she knows how this works. One by one, everybody unmute.
Do it, alphabetical order.
That's right. Well, it's gone now. Can you hear us okay now?
Yes.
Good. And it's a good volume?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a little different because since I've invited Bibi to join us, we've switched to a different style microphone so that we can both be heard okay. Sometimes hearing her too much, I might move it over here because I don't want to hurt anybody's ears with my loud daughter, who's always loud.
I was going to say, my teen group chat, it's like, did you do the history thing? I'm like, which one? And she's like, the history thing in classroom. I'm like, which one? We get many history things in classroom. Like, in the classroom. I'm like, which one?
I tell you, most of the drama we have with online school right now is if they can get into their classroom moments before the class starts. It's not going in. I can't get in. Text my teacher and tell them it's not working. Well, we are here to discuss tech topics and how they affect our lives. And I'm hoping folks have brought, maybe recommendations. Have you guys been watching anything cool these days? Listening to anything cool? What is my lead up to recommendations? It's books, websites, audiobooks, podcasts, movies or TV shows. Applications you've used recently. Is there anything on this list of things you'd like to share with the rest of us?
Scott.
Yes, Bill. And I see a hand from Judy.
I don't know if we recommended this one or not, but Chernobyl is a documentary movie series that about the Chernobyl disaster. And it's been around a while, but it's pretty interesting to watch. It sort of tells you the whole story of how this thing unfolded and was contained.
I was going to say, I think that came out not last summer, but the summer before last. I remember watching it in Alaska, and it was excellent.
Yeah, well, I watched it quite a while ago. It just popped up in my mind. Hey, that was a pretty decent show.
Chernobyl. So yeah, no, I would recommend that as well. What I found fascinating about that is, well, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I feel like it kind of paralleled the way our leadership was making the decisions, where they were caught off guard, and it was worse. It gets worse and worse. They spend a lot of time pretending like it's not a bad thing, and assuming the best. And then as information is put out, they find out it's worse than they could have imagined. And then more information gets out, and it's worse than that information. I'm sorry, Bill.
Yeah, it's very similar to this COVID thing. They're always behind the eight ball. They're never ahead of it.
Yeah, that's right. They weren't prepared to have that kind of emergency, and they didn't even understand the scope of what it meant to have an emergency that big.
Then up to the point of not listening to the experts, the people who actually did know something about it, the politicians were in front of it all the time.
I have my vision tomorrow. Interesting. For the last 3 days, I've gotten an update. My update today is do not take acetaminophen or ibuprofen 3 days prior to the vaccination, and now no alcohol 3 days prior to the vaccination.
Well, 3 days.
For the maximum amount of efficacy. So that's kind of a new twist that I have not seen anyplace.
I know that early on, while they were talking about these vaccinations, I think it's the Russian vaccination, they were talking about needing to not drink alcohol for 48 hours beforehand. And the Mexicans were joking about whether that was possible or not.
Well, I wasn't joking. I was like shocked. But anyway, so that just came out this morning, and my vaccination's tomorrow.
Oh, excellent. Chester just given us an update. He'd gotten vaccinated in the stadium just recently.
Good.
So other recommendations. Judy, you had your hand up. Did you have something you wanted to share?
I did. I did watch One Night in Miami, and it was pretty good. It was a fictional account, not non-fictional, but it was James Brown, Sam Cooke, Malcolm X, and Cassius Clay before he became, not Muhammad Ali, Malcolm X, Sam Cooke.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, and it was good. It was pretty good.
What was it on, Judy?
I believe I watched it on Prime.
Okay.
I went and looked that up after we talked and saw that it was kind of a what if. What if you put these people all in the same room? What would happen?
It was actually pretty good.
Well, it's on our list to watch, but we haven't watched it yet. That's that One Night in Miami.
Scott, I guess I was out of the room, but if you're getting recommendations, I saw a very good movie. Germane to our situation, and it's called Lockdown.
Lockdown.
Right. And it's about the lockdown, and it was hilarious and a terrific movie. I saw it on IPTV.
Lockdown is on HBO Max, and I don't get it.
Lockdown. So it's a Streamio.
Yeah, lockdown. Not lockdown is one word, two words.
Oh, two words. Lockdown.
Yes.
Anybody in it we know? You say it's about the pandemic, Irving?
It's actually about the psychological effects of the lockdown.
Oh.
Oh.
Dark.
I've got one here that says a crime heist movie. Is that the one we're talking about?
No.
Is it Lockdown?
That's two words. It's a 2021 movie. How about as one word?
Maybe it's one word.
Lockdown is a restriction policy. No, that's just Wikipedia explaining what we're dealing with.
You just say movie or something. 2020 movie.
Is it a 2020 movie? Was it a recent movie, Irving?
Yes. Maybe 21.
Well, I bet it's not this Sammy Hagar. Pandemic lockdown. No.
Who's in the movie?
Oh, yeah. Give us an actor.
I don't know any actors.
Well, the only lockdown I've come up with so far is the crime heist movie.
It's called Locked Down.
Paul, that vacuum sound I think is coming from you. You say Locked Down?
Yeah.
Well, that's the crime heist movie that keeps coming up.
Yeah. Well, what's he talking about?
The documentary about the psychological effects.
Is it a documentary?
That's what I understood him to say. But is it Locked ED?
I think Irving went to go see if his wife knew any of the actors from it. So I don't think it's a documentary.
Well, no. It was a comedy. Very, very good movie. One actor she recalls, is his name is Dooley, D-U-L-E, I guess, or A. And he was in Suits, a long-running show.
Oh, no, he wasn't in Suits.
Well, you know who I'm talking about then, so maybe you can find it there.
Dooley, the black guy.
Are you sure this isn't the heist movie? Romantic comedy, heist?
I watched one called Death to 2020, and it was a comedy with a whole bunch of, like, all kinds of actors in it and comedians. But who was the one on Friends? Lisa Kudrow, I think.
Oh, okay. And
yeah, but that's a funny one about, it's called Death to 2020.
I thought I saw that pop up on Netflix. Is that right?
Scott, yeah. Yes, that robbery was part of the plot. That's the movie.
That's the movie. Okay, cool. So that's Locked Down, Locked ED, two words, Locked Down, and that's a brand new movie.
And it's on HBO Max.
Yes. Oh, it is? Have you seen it? Definitely.
No, but I was for it, and it's only on HBO Max.
So that is another one that we're probably using Streamio for.
I viewed it on IPTV, which I think a lot of people are familiar with.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Lockdown is really, and it's just about a couple that are locked down, and they are not happy with each other. You know, it's the kind of domestic situation you suspect is going on in a lot of places where people are forced to live together now. And so it was just kind of a story about a couple with their challenge.
So is that a different movie?
No, it's the same Lockdown.
Yeah. Anne Hathaway, Ben Stiller.
Okay, yeah, that looks like the same. Oh, Ben Stiller's in it. So it's definitely supposed to be a funny movie. Mindy Kaling, she's funny. A couple shelter in their London brownstone over the early weeks of the pandemic in an intimate heist comedy. Boy, that's a story for the ages.
Huh?
Well, I mean, it's relevant. You take a heist story and a romantic comedy and set it in a pandemic. That sounds like a 2020, 2021 story. Mm-hmm.
You were talking about the four blacks. They were such heroes at that time in life. And it was like they got together and just were talking about the problems that they were having, even though they reached essentially the peak of their profession. You know, they still weren't treated equally. So it was kind of spending time talking about the frustrations they had with, you know, how much they were really offering people with their singing or boxing or whatever it was people enjoyed watching. But then it was like they would be hidden when it was time to have a social or something like that.
So you watched the movie, One Night in Miami? You've seen it?
Yes. I thought both of us had, but Sandy can't remember any of it. So I think she fell asleep. That may be an indication of how she felt about it. But I thought it was a great movie. I enjoyed it. The actors were very good.
Well, we've got it on our list. I have recently, I probably mentioned last week, I've recently gotten into watching some older movies, almost just for the chase of finding the availability of the older movies. And I just watched a Humphrey Bogart movie called To Have and Have Not. I don't know if you guys have heard of that before.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it was a To Have and Have Not. It is a 1944 movie based on Ernest Hemingway's novel. And what's interesting about this story is that the screenplay, from what I read, was helped by Hemingway.
Where did you see it? What channel?
See, this is where it gets weird. Couldn't find it anywhere. I went out late. It's part of my Hudson Hawk list of you must see movies. But the question is, where do you get to see one of these? And if you Google it, you might find somebody with an old DVD that's selling it on eBay or on Amazon. But some of these movies, and that's what's kind of gotten me into this genre, these 1950 and older movies, is kind of the thrill of the chase. If I can find the movie to watch it, especially if it's been recommended. So I ended up using BitTorrent to find this movie. I found it at the Pirate Bay and used a BitTorrent client to download it. And there was actually a really decent, like a remastered 1080p high definition version of it. And one of the things I found interesting from it was that they used the line. They used that line about a whistle, you know what you do to whistle? You just put your lips together and blow. Mm-hmm. And it's like one of these sexy lines that you hear repeated in different comedies and different adventure movies. I never knew where the line was from until I was watching this movie. The plot is where is he? He's in some South African or no, South American type area running a boat. And if you've had any experience, I imagine, with chartering boats or being that boat captain, you might find that fascinating in itself. I kept thinking of the Marina San Carlos and how there's these random expats that are running boats for sail fishing. And that's essentially Humphrey Bogart's plan. But it's obvious he's got a backstory. His character has a backstory that we don't really get to understand. He's just got skills, like a Chuck Norris. He's got these things that he's just capable of doing. But in a noir, kind of 1940s style of Humphrey Bogart style, I can take out a bullet. I shouldn't. You should take him to a doctor. But if I'm all we've got, I can do it. So I'm going to add that to our list of recommendations. I found it very enjoyable. I did mention last week, another thing that I've enjoyed about these style movies is they're very dialogue driven. And I find them very, very pleasing to have in the background as I'm doing other work. I seem to be able to follow the story that's going on and do multitask with other activities. And so I've caught myself watching a lot of these movies. Probably the frustration is finding the time to find the movie. But I'm whittling myself through a list of 16 Howard Hawk movies. And I think I'm going to go on to Alfred Hitchcock and Orson Welles movies. Because there's a whole lot out there I know that I haven't seen.
Well, Scott, when you're walking through those things, it became more and more of a fashion to have more cuts in those movies. Hitchcock, you know, with the birds flashing from scene to scene. But those old ones, one of the things that you kind of enjoy about them is they have long, long scenes before they cut to the next one.
Yeah, I agree. And it's obvious that their movies being made in a time period where they couldn't tell the story visually. That there was a lot of dialogue dedicated to bringing out the plot. Talking about things that just happened that didn't happen on screen, because there's no way they could have filmed that on screen at the time. And I find all that really fascinating to kind of geek out on is that stuff. And as you get more into more modern movies, exactly like you said, there's lots of cuts, lots of visual storytelling. In fact, I'm curious about Alfred Hitchcock. I think of the movie Psycho. And there's a lot going on there visually that if you're not looking at the screen, you're going to miss the story. And that's really what I find with modern movies is the problem. For me to have a movie, I actually enjoy a lot of bad movies that are modern because I don't have to look at the screen to know what's going on. So I find myself watching a lot of B movies because I want to multitask. I want to read. I want to work on a program. I want to work on a website. But I want to have some kind of entertainment going on in the background. And if I find myself rewinding, it's missing the point.
One of the things I've noticed about the old movies is that you can understand what they're saying. In modern movies, they would be talking and the music's playing and they're walking away. And the only way I can hear them is wear earphones.
Well, maybe that's a testimony to how dialogue-driven a lot of these older movies are. They like so many of our modern movies, almost doesn't matter what's being said in a scene as long as the special effects are correct and the smoke's correct and they're chopping through the different visuals correctly. You could almost say anything in the scene, and because it's visually driven, you get the gist of what the story's trying to tell you.
See, I've got to go. Bye-bye.
What's going? You're out of here, Paul?
Yeah, I'm going to. I got a sudden appointment with my dermatologist. So
okay,
at an opening. So got to go. Bye-bye.
We'll see you next week. See you next week. Thanks for showing up.
Bye, Paul. Okay, Scott, you were talking about hearing a line over and over again. They use it in other movies. You ever heard of the Wilhelm scream?
Oh yes. Yeah, go ahead and explain that. That's I find that interesting too.
Well, the Wilhelm scream originated. I don't even know who did it, but it's been a signature little sound effect that's been put into countless movies, anywhere from Star Wars to whatever. I'm going to post a little compilation in the chat, and it's worth your while to go listen to it because once you do, you will hear it all the time in the movies. They're still using it. It just gets put in there when somebody dies or falls off a cliff or whatever. That's the Wilhelm scream, and you will recognize it. I used to show it to my media students, and they would say, "Yeah, well, but now I hear it all the time," and it's true. It's very true. This is it's in the chat line, so that's the Wilhelm scream.
Oh,
and it originated from the very first guy who, the very first time it showed up was a cowboy movie and somebody gets shot in the leg with an arrow and his name is Wilhelm.
What?
So that's the original name for it.
It's funny that you mentioned Star Wars. That is absolutely the only reason I know about it is because it's talked about in the special effects of Star Wars.
Yeah, one of the stormtroopers gets shot in that scene when they're swung across the very first movie. They swung across the big open space, and he shoots one of the stormtroopers in the door and screams.
All right, let's try this scream real quick.
Bill, is it the are they just using the same or
it uses the same scream?
Oh yeah, I know that scream.
Was that the scream right there, Bill?
I know.
Yeah, when a guy gets hit, you just keep.
Now we're never gonna be able to not hear it.
I always heard it. That's the thing. I always heard it.
We're gonna.
So I'm not even surprised.
We're gonna hear it in every movie we're watching.
I've always heard it, Joe.
There it is.
Awesome, Bill.
Send it to Emily. Watch them suffer.
Well, I'm definitely going to put it in our notes in today's meeting. That's fun.
Hey, Bill, it's possible there are some things we shouldn't know.
Oh, don't be that way, Jim. Let me fix my microphone.
What's the other one? Echoing.
We'll be hearing it forever.
Oh, which mic am I looking for? I'm looking for that one. I've got too many microphones now. Thank you, Bill. That was awesome.
Just movie trivia. It reminded me of it when you said something about the line getting used over and over. Well, this one definitely gets used over and over. And it's a tribute to the guy, but it's also just they sneak it in. Sound effects guys sneak it in all the time. They put it in the movies, and it's accepted. Nobody complains about it as far as I know. Except maybe the audience from hearing it now. You guys will all hear it from now on.
From now on, Bill has ruined us. We're never going to be
yes,
the same
well,
again.
Cheryl and I will be watching. We'll be watching some movie, and it'll show up, and we just both look at each other and say, "Yep."
The other thing that, Bill is known for doing is pointing out continuity problems in movies. And it does change the way you watch things because you notice things. And then you go back and you go, wait a minute, she was wearing that on the other side. Or, you know, the different things that happen in movies because they film.
Yeah, she's got a different necklace now, or she doesn't wear the necklace. She just had the necklace on.
Yeah,
many times.
You can relate to that.
One of my favorite continuity. One of my favorite continuity shots is a chase scene in one of the very early James Bond movies. In this car, he flips it up and puts it on two wheels and goes through a narrow alley, and they cut around to the other side of the alley, and he comes out on the other wheels.
Harry, do you know which movie that was?
Oh God, I can't remember, but I can look it up for you.
It's like he's going through the looking glass. It's a James Bond in Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. He goes in on the right hand wheels and comes out on the left hand wheels.
Yeah, he goes in on the driver's side, comes out on the passenger side. What happened in the tunnel?
Yeah. One,
What happened in the tunnel?
What was that,
Chester? Early 1800s movie and the show A Flag with the 48 Stars.
Oh, wow.
It seems like they could do their homework.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Wearing of certain things that, you know, are made out of polyester before it was even a thing, you know.
That's not a continuity problem. That's got a different name. But there, on the movie set, on any kind of movie set at all, there is one person whose job it is to monitor the stars, the people in the shots, and make sure that they're the continuity person to make sure that the cigarette is the same length in the next shot.
Oh,
you know, things like that. That is their only job.
Yeah, make sure they're wearing the right blouse. Oh, I'm sorry, Kathleen. Go ahead.
The age issue is another thing. You'll see a general, and he's 25 years old.
I love cars, and you'll see antique cars going back to 1910, and they're all clean.
Yeah.
It's never dirty.
They were never dirty. They were spotless. In fact, they probably had a car caretaker that came with it on the movie lot for the movie that had borrowed the car.
So back to recommendations.
Okay, but one last thing on cars. If you enjoy old cars, that Dick Tracy movie that Warren Beatty did is a great one for cars. Go ahead. What do you got, Cheryl?
I'm wondering if anybody else watched the, I think it's a Netflix series. I don't know if it's made by Netflix or whatever, but it's called The Good Girls. And I watched the first season. I binged it one night till 3 a.m. But it was, the first season was really quite good. Three good women who run into financial difficulties in three different situations. And they end up robbing a grocery store and ending up with way more money than they expected because they have now gotten involved with a gang activity that they didn't expect. Anyways, the first series, first 10 episodes, were quite lighthearted and funny in the situations these girls get into. But the second season I'm watching now, it's getting really quite dark. And the things that they're getting involved in is getting really quite yucky, if I can use that word. And I just wondered if anybody else had watched it. I think I'm going to make it through all three seasons, but interesting show.
I haven't watched it, but I've seen it advertised, and you said it gets yucky. Is that kind of like the way Breaking Bad just got so deep into it? Is that what you're talking about, that kind of downward progression into crime?
Well, yeah, I have never watched Breaking Bad, so I can't compare it to that. But that is kind of what's happening. The one girl is getting really, really over the top involved with this gangster. And it was almost believable at first. And now it's getting, you don't want to think that could happen. Kind of attitude.
Well, it looks like it's in the third season and available on Netflix. But it looks like it was produced for Hulu. Is that right? It looks like it was made for Hulu NBC. So,
well, don't watch it. I would not recommend it as a family movie.
Or a TV show. It's a show.
So you live in life, and no one would like to keep it that way.
Say that again, Jim.
Cheryl has lived a sheltered life, and Bill would like to keep it that way.
Well, stop opening her eyes.
I have a small comment to make, Cheryl, about Cheryl and my lifestyle. She said she binged it and came to bed at 3 o'clock. Well, I routinely many times get up at 4 o'clock. And does the term two ships passing in the dark mean anything?
And the other thing that I'll mention is about our deco or deco, whatever.
Oh yeah, your Wi-Fi technology. Mesh network, the TP-Link Deco M5. Go ahead, Cheryl. I just had to announce it.
Okay. Well, the Deco Link. I don't know what's going on. Bill can more about that. But when I went to go to bed at 3 a.m., I tried to tell our Alexa to good night. And when I do that, you know, the lights go off and the temperature goes down and everything is ready. But nobody was online at that time. She was having a hard time connecting to the internet, and that keeps happening. So not only did I go to bed at 3 o'clock, I left all the lights on, and because I could not get anybody to listen to me to turn off. So
I can't wait until said, that's a legitimate excuse. Like I'm from the generation that watched as my computer crashed was not a legitimate excuse to why the homework didn't get turned in. To a time period, well, that's a very valid reason for not getting the homework turned in. I'm waiting for smart houses to get the same way. It's like, what could I do? Alexa wasn't functioning. Of course all the I just set my Alexa off.
Well, there was a commercial on TV, and I think Echo, it's for Simplify, which is a banking system. I don't know what the commercial is for, but there's two people, and he's in his house, and he gives his command, everything comes on, and he walks out. Well, he goes to the dentist, and he comes back, and now his frozen mouth, he cannot make the door open. He's locked outside. He cannot make anything happen because his blurred speech. And it reminds me, my cousin has a face identification. Well, he had some cancer, and he had a skin cancer operation, and his phone would not unlock for him after that. So, you know, like...
Wow, Cheryl, that's some dark comedy right there.
We laughed at him, but anyways.
Oh, make it so much better.
That's awesome. Oh, that's really dark.
If it wasn't dark enough, you made it better.
Cousins, what can I say? You know?
Not only did he get cancer, but we also laughed at him when he failed to open his phone.
Are you getting our attention, Judy, or you got to get out of here?
I want to ask a computer question.
Let's do it. I think, have we gotten through all our recommendations? Anybody have any last thing they want to add? Okay, well.
Has it upgraded to Big Sur?
Anybody on Macintosh Big Sur? Nobody. And I don't recommend it. I don't recommend it yet. Because it has been built as a for your Macintosh, it's been built as a transitioning operating system. So what it's doing is it's bringing you the features of the new computers to your old computer so that when you finally upgrade your new computer, you're ready for that experience. That being said, nobody has reported performance gains. People have reported problems with it. They've had problems running older software in it. And so at the moment, my whole position is, why would you upgrade it unless you need it?
Because now I have 6 red dots telling me I have... plus big red dot that's saying my operating system. So it's getting pretty annoying.
Those red dots are all about psychologically controlling you. That is your computer socially engineering what you do.
I'll hold on a little longer.
I would hold on until the last, because I can't imagine you're looking forward to anything but a slight performance drop and an incompatibility possible problem. And if you're... if there is no extra software you're running on your Mac, it's probably less of a problem. But if you're somebody that's running a copy of Photoshop, or you're running, if you've got something that you have downloaded to install in your computer that you depend on, there's a very good chance that you're not going to be pleased with how it runs on the new version yet. So I would okay. I would hold off as long as possible.
What's the name of the new version again?
Big Sur.
Big Sur is the name of the new operating system. Judy, what's the question you're trying to ask?
I said the only thing I really depend on is Quicken. So I would have to wait for.
Yeah, that's a great example of what I'm talking about. And it might actually, if you were to upgrade and find that you weren't pleased with Quicken, it might push you into a Quicken subscription service.
It's already done that.
If it's a subscription service with online, are you doing it online? That may not affect it then. In fact, with the new operating system and moving to this new platform, if you find that the majority of what you're doing is online in a web browser, you're not going to be affected by it. We're really talking about those platform-dependent pieces of software, the ones that are written for Mac OS. And you have to, like, in the past, you'd go to a store and buy a box and pull a disk out and stick it into your computer. In the past, that's the best way I can think of it is. You remember when you used to buy a box that was full of air and a disk? That's the kind of software I'm talking about.
Long, long ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Does anybody need any DVDs, blank DVDs?
Hey, I would take them if you're giving them away. I continually have people asking me to put something on disk still. And,
okay.
Yeah. So
well, then down by the office, I'll just drop some off. I have a stack like this high.
And you don't plan on ever using them again?
No, because the computer doesn't have that capability.
Right. Yeah, we end up using them now simply for old stuff, just whatever the old thing is.
I use it to hang on my fruit trees to keep the birds away.
If anybody's looking for those DVDs, I've got stacks of them that I'll give you.
Judy, does that work?
Yeah.
Judy, does that? Oh, yeah. Good.
You know, the flickers that are poking holes in my grapefruit, yeah.
Wonderful, thank you.
The reflections, they is that what it does? Is it scares the birds? It's kind of like a DVD scarecrow?
With the wind, too, they're constantly moving, so, yeah.
I think Abby does that.
Oh, yeah, at her garden?
Yeah, she has DVDs in her garden.
You thought she was growing a media tree, but really it's a scarecrow.
I never asked her about it, but that's probably the reason.
Be careful what you plant in your garden. What would you do with a gross of DVDs, a bushel of DVDs nowadays?
Give them to Scott.
Yeah, I think that was a total dad joke. Well, anybody has brought topics, anything computer related you guys are interested in?
Yep, Scott,
I got one.
Okay, well, I'm going to hear from Jim first, because, Bill, you talk all the time.
No, I don't. Only important stuff.
Yes, yes, it's critical stuff. I would hate to miss it. But let's give Jim a shot. And then.
Okay. Okay. I've been seeing ads for software that will help you create widgets. And I guess I don't really understand widgets. Can you tell me how that software works and what we're actually doing there?
I don't think so.
I probably know what it is.
Do you know what it is? Have you heard of software for making widgets?
I've heard of widgets before.
Well, widgets throughout manufacturing, we've used the term widget, and specifically in software for a long time. If you're building widgets on a Macintosh and on an iPhone, those little add-ons. That must be what you're talking about, Jim. That's the most recent thing I can think
specifically
of.
Specifically on the iPhone.
Yeah, yeah. That's what they're calling their new little programs, their little dashboard programs that can be
correct
interlaced in the home screen with your icons. You're able to have a widget for, say, weather a widget for alarms, a widget for a notebook. So you don't actually have to start those programs. They're just there, running active on your home screen of your phone. This is a concept that's been around on Android since the beginning, and it's being robbed into the into Apple's ecosystem.
You know, I do actually have that widget thing. That's how I like the all these are changed. I had a little like widget app that helped let me change all my little icons on everything.
All your icons, yeah.
Yep.
So like on my phone, and that widgets are a real common thing on Android, kind of like what Bibi was just talking about. Like I don't know if you can make out my home screen, but that's got two different widgets on it, maybe three different widgets on it. It's got a widget for the time, date, weather. It's got a widget for my battery life, and you can see it's at 100%. I just pulled it off the charger. And then it's got a widget at the bottom here that keeps track of my smartwatch steps. And on the Android, you can have multiple home screens. So on this one, it's got a widget of my music player and my podcast player. So I can just start and stop those and see what's playing right from that home screen.
But how do they differ from the icons that are already on our home screen for the Weather Channel, for your music player, and so forth?
Well, so that's a great question. If we go back here, you can see I can already see the weather. I don't actually have to go into the weather app. It's just there, like the dashboard of a car.
Okay, right, okay.
The media player, if I wanted to start some music, I have to be careful because I'll go into the widget, but I can just press the play button from the widget. I don't actually have to go into the media player.
Okay.
But these widgets, a typical paradigm is to be able to use the widget's functionality, but also it'll take you to the program itself if you tap it. So there I've just gone into my podcast program from the widget on the home screen. And so if you're seeing ads for making widgets, it's probably because it's specifically for iPhone and it's a new thing to iPhone. This
idea, yes.
Yeah, this idea that you can add this kind of, I like to call it dashboard. I like to use the metaphor of a car dashboard. If you could imagine deciding what's important to be on your dashboard, you can pick and choose those things.
Scott, is it the same as a shortcut on your desktop?
No, it's not. In actuality, if you wanted to use a desktop metaphor, let me go over to my display here. These tiles on Windows 10, you don't really need to make it out, but in Windows 10 you have the start menu, and you can set up this start screen. And like this first widget is my calendar widget. They're called live tiles in Windows. And it shows me what's today's date and what's the assignment that I have right now. What's today's appointment? In this case, it's the computer club at 10 a.m. Next to it, I have a weather widget. Again, they're called live tiles in Windows. And so it's showing a weather prediction for the next 3 days. And it will flip up and show me today's weather and temperature. And I have a mail. I must have the live tile turned off on mail. Oh, no, it's on. It's just not working. For some reason, it should show me any new email messages right there. And that's without having to go into the application. So I really feel like it's similar to when you think about the dashboard on the car. You don't have to monitor the tires to see how fast you're going. You just glance down and it shows you how fast you're going. That's kind of the idea of the widget interface, is that all that information, you're picking and choosing. I am gesturing to a screen that nobody can see me. You're picking and choosing those things that are of importance to you to put organized together.
Does it use broadband?
Well, it just depends on the app that the widget is interacting with. Like the weather app that I was just showing. A weather app needs to be updated periodically. And so it needs to be online to get you the latest weather funny enough, the way the widget works, if you are offline, it'll just continue to report the last weather update it had. So you might be looking down at 50 degrees, but it's noon, and you know it's not 50 degrees anymore.
So, Scott, on my iPhone, my widgets, like I swipe over and I can see the widgets, and it tells me at the bottom that there are three new widgets I can add to this screen. But the weather one is sitting there, and you're right, it's the last location, or it's my location right now, I guess, and it's running. If I turn on the weather app, like if I go into the weather app, it runs my battery down so quickly. But it seems like the widget is always running. So what's it doing to my battery power?
Well, I think you just answered your own question. It sounds like because when you go into the app that's associated with a widget, and keep in mind, it doesn't need an app associated with a widget. It's just that's the paradigm that we've been following with widgets, is that there's something that's being dynamically updated all the time. Another example would be the Apple Watch. They've got a number of programs that work on the watch, and they're associated with an application on the phone. Or they're by themselves on the watch, and they don't have it. So it doesn't need to have an app. It's just that's the paradigm we've been associating with it. With that being said, Cheryl, you could think of it as two different applications. The widget is actually a separate application from the application it's associated with. And that means the widget can have different power performance, power performance scale. It could have different needs as far as, like Irving was asking about broadband. It could be that the widget actually uses very little broadband. It's just getting a little text messages updates. But when you go into the sister application it's associated with, well, then maybe there's weather news, maybe there's video that's available to you. There's all these robust features that are in that parent app that it's associated with. I'm sorry, I'm mixing my metaphors for... Yeah. But I think you're getting the idea. And so it's possible that the widget does run just fine, constrained with its power performance. But then you open the app, and the app is like you're breaking free. You're letting it use up as much internet as is available at it at that moment. It's using as much screen power as available at that moment. It could be when you go into that app, it's a performance hog, but the widget isn't. I'm surprised to hear you say that the widget or the weather app would be draining your battery. I would not have expected that. It's not the kind of app I would think. And it would actually, if you really recognize that, if you're able to single that out, I think I might uninstall it and reinstall it, because that just doesn't sound right to me. The paradigm of a weather app shouldn't be draining your battery.
If the weather app is drawing a map all the time, that will do it.
That'll do it, Dave?
Yeah.
That's great insight. I hadn't thought of that.
I've seen a lot of discussion recently about screen layouts on Windows. Most computers are a 16:9 ratio, and we're seeing a return more to the 16:10 or the 4:3 type ratio. But also, something simple that was suggested to me that I kind of like is just moving the taskbar from the bottom to one of the sides. So then you see more things to me that are useful, because I'm always crunched vertically rather than in width for the screen. I'm just wondering if anyone else has tried this.
I think I might.
Crunching vertical? What do you? I'm not getting it, Dave. I'm sorry.
In other words, there's so much real estate on your screen that you can view. And it seems like I'm always trying to scroll up and down rather than side to side. And part of the reason is you're wasting space at the bottom of the screen with your taskbar. So simply moving the taskbar to the side seems to make the screen more usable and larger.
I'm sorry, I obviously wasn't paying attention. Of course, that is a great suggestion to just take, if you're looking at my screen now, just to grab your taskbar. It might be locked. Mine is locked right now. I'm going to unlock it. and you can just drag it up to the side of the screen to get yourself more real estate. I'm looking at the wrong display. Here we go. I just did it here. So you're right. There is a lot of laptops out there that have this 16x9 dimension that is like a theater screen size. And you can get more real estate just by bringing your taskbar and moving it around. I don't know, you Windows users have paid attention to this, but forever we've been able to put this taskbar anywhere we want. Well, I should say anywhere on the four sides of the screen. Are you able to make out me flipping it? Now it's sitting at the top of the screen and dropping down. It could be on the side of the screen and popping out. And if you're not able to do this as easily as I'm doing it, it's probably because the taskbar is locked. If you click on it with the right mouse button, you'll find lock all taskbars in Windows 10. And if there's a check mark next to it, then you can't accidentally drag it to the four sides of the screen.
Okay, mine gives me an option to lock the taskbar, but I can't seem to move it.
So if it's got a check mark next to it, then it's already locked.
Nope.
Well, in classic Windows IT support, I would say try locking it and unlocking it.
Well, yeah, to move it, you have to be in an unused part of the taskbar.
Oh,
just click on it and move.
That is a great insight, Dave. You have to click in the right part of the taskbar. There's plenty of places that are not the correct place to grab the taskbar.
Am I clicking with the right button or the left?
So the right mouse button will bring up all the options.
Correct.
And the left mouse button would be used. You'd click and hold the left button down. Let me take mine off lock. Click and hold on a blank part of the taskbar, and you can grab it. What you're doing is you're grabbing and dragging it. So I'm clicking and holding the button down, and I'm dragging to the side of the screen I want it to be on. No?
Clicking and holding.
And you're sure you're not locked? Disregard the suggestion to lock and unlock. Windows has a history of settings that are corrupted, and they are only fixed by setting them the opposite of what you need, and then resetting them the way you need them.
Well, I tried that.
Yeah.
And I locked and unlocked. And,
Oh, wow. I accidentally just brought mine over to the other screen. I didn't realize I could do that. Look at that.
You know, my mother used to have problems with the dryer, and the dryer wouldn't work all day long. My father would walk in the door, and the damn thing would start. Bill just walked in here, touched it with his hand, and now my passport moves. Men.
It's the magical touch. Cheryl, you might have heard me say before, it's really important you expect things to work too. Don't add any negativity to using a computer. It definitely will sense that and not work for you.
Okay, so now I know what's going on. What happened is I was expecting the cursor to change or something, but all I did was click on it and move, and it moved. There I was expecting something to happen to tell me that it was unlocked or it was moving, you know. So,
okay,
Scott,
great. Yeah, Bill.
I've been telling Cheryl for years that the same thing applies to video poker machines in Vegas. She has these negative thoughts. She yells at them, and I said, "No, it can hear you. It's just not going to do anything."
I'm a firm believer in the positive thinking of technology working. It has so many opportunities to fail on you. Why would you cast failure onto them? You're going to have plenty of that to wade through. You need to expect it to work when you touch it.
By the way, Scott, John Steinbeck wrote about that very thing in the Sea of Cortez book back in the early 50s.
Oh, the power of positive thinking?
No, but he said, don't ever get a mechanical object pissed off at you.
That's great.
He had an outboard motor. He had an outboard motor that would take him 5 miles out to the sea and then would stop working.
Well, and all his yelling and frustration. I just find I help so many, such a variety of different people with computer technology. And I learned a long time ago that if you start by proving to yourself it's not working, it's never going to work. You can't start from that assumption. I've sat down with customers that want to spend their time proving to me why it doesn't work, and I just kind of shrug and go, well, I mean, if that's how you want to spend your money, I'm charging you hourly, though. Why don't we concentrate on working, not working? But, I mean, I have to sympathize, because if you spend hours trying to do something and you can't get it to work, you want somebody to share in your misery with you. So many times they've called me over just to be miserable with them because it won't work.
Pretty funny.
Have we got any other topics? I have a list.
Wait. My turn. You said I was after Jimmy.
Oh, yeah. Bill's next.
Now my feelings are hurt.
I can guarantee it'll probably happen again. I'm sorry, Bill.
No doubt. Anyway, we're going back to Cheryl's problem of 3 o'clock in the morning and the deco isn't working. Now, for some reason, every once in a while, my deco winds up with the red light on top instead of the green. It means it's not connected or something. The only way to fix this that I know of is to reset the main router. I just unplug it, plug it back in. So what I've done is I've set a timer on the main router. So at 3 o'clock, for, you know, half a minute, it unplugs the router. It resets the router. But I would really like to know what is causing my problem to begin with, rather than my little Rube Goldberg fix.
Gosh, Bill, you know what that reminds me of? Is Linda's problem with the Orbi. Oh, I didn't even realize Linda had gotten disconnected. Linda, are you there? So Bill's describing a problem with his mesh network that reminds me of your issues with Telmex. Because that Orbi, Linda had the Orbi mesh, and if Telmex hiccuped, she would lose connectivity through her. Oh, we've lost her again. I wonder if she's having connectivity problems right now.
I think I can confirm that, because I monitor my internet when my browser's on, and it continually, maybe 3-4 times a day, it hiccups. It weeks out for a couple seconds and comes back. So, but it doesn't cause this problem all the time. It's just very rarely, like once or twice, once a day, every other day, it will be disconnected. I won't have any internet.
And if I can say, the iPhone and the iPad don't pick up as quickly as the Windows machines. It's just an observation I've seen, that when the deco bleeps or whatever, it seems like within seconds Bill's back online, but with my iPad it doesn't.
Are you getting out of here?
I'm getting out of here.
Okay, everybody say goodbye to BB.
Bye.
Bye BB.
I'm on here.
Hey Linda, oh my god, look at the snow.
Yeah. Yes, it's snowing.
I want to see the snow.
And almost as much as it's snowing in Alberta, Canada.
In Green Valley.
Well, it's hailing here in Arizona.
Oh, my gosh, Linda.
Is it snowing at your house? Chester.
No, it's hail.
It's snowing big flakes. It's wet.
Wow.
Wow.
No, we're getting hail. Can you believe it?
When was the last time there was snow in Green Valley?
Last year.
Oh, really?
Almost exactly the same time.
But still, isn't that unusual, or is that, or do you guys expect it once or twice a year?
No, it's very unusual. Let's see. Right now it's 37 degrees.
Well, that sounds very unusual.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Kind of cool.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, you know what I have a problem with my, I have the Eero, you know.
This is the competitor to the M5. This is another mesh network, and it was recently, like in the last year or two, maybe three, Amazon has bought it. Go ahead, Linda.
Correct. Okay. Well, the thing is, mine is, if the internet goes down here, which it does, CenturyLink, well, then it tries to switch it over to the mesh network. How do you avoid that? Because what happens to me is it switches over to the mesh network, and then I can't use my printer when it comes back on.
I'm really confused. So you're saying that almost, the way you're presenting that, it's almost like you've got two different networks going.
Correct. And I don't know how to fix that issue because, like I said, it switches over to the printers the internet goes down, and then I can't use my printers after that until I switch it back.
Shouldn't you have the printers on the mesh network?
I have them on the CenturyLink.
Yeah, you should move them to your mesh network.
Okay.
If you move them to the mesh network, then they'll be in the same local area network, and you won't lose that connectivity, regardless of what happens with internet.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll do that. Yeah. So I need to redo them?
Yeah, if they're Wi-Fi printers, then you'll have to put in the Wi-Fi information for your mesh.
Okay.
We had to do printers, the Fire Stick, the TV. We had to do them all separate.
Oh, yeah, the thermostat on the wall, the Nest. It took us, when we switched over to the depot, it took me almost a week, I think, to get all of the units switched over. And there's one outlet that I can't switch. I can't figure out how to get it switched over to the depot. So it's sitting on its own little network running one little plug that I just need to control. It just goes off and on once a day.
Jim's just gotten on with us and says, hi, folks. He doesn't have a microphone or a camera, so you can't see or hear him. It would be interesting to hear if he's had the same experience with his M5. But from what I understand, he has an awesome internet connection, so maybe not.
Yeah,
My question is, the outlet you can't switch a Wise smart outlet?
Sorry, Dave, say that again?
Is it a Wise, as in brand, smart outlet that you can't switch?
It's the Kasa, KASA.
Okay.
I only got one.
Argument with Wise devices that's been going on 3 months and many, many conversations that basically if you switch what subnet a device is on, you can no longer use that device. In other words, it's trying to configure to the wrong subnet.
Hey, you know what? That's very interesting. That is actually a characteristic of equipment like these Internet of Things equipment that use cloud services or don't. Like your Ring doorbell, for example. It doesn't matter what network it's on in your house. Say you have two or three different Wi-Fi access points, different Wi-Fi names, essentially different subnets. The Ring doorbell doesn't care because it always talks to the internet first. Whereas the Wise actually has a reputation of not needing a cloud service to support it. But what that means is you're responsible for that communication with that device. And it would be very important where it sits in your network, what IP address it has, and its availability to your other equipment. Oh, go ahead, Dave.
And what it appears to be is they're using basically reconnect after a power failure type software incorrectly. In other words, if your device is communicating and it loses power, you want it to automatically reconnect, and they're picking up the old IP address. Well, they're somewhere it's being cached, but nobody seems to know where it's happening because in my case, they accidentally got configured to my VPN router, which I didn't want because that router has the best signal. So when I moved it to the Telmex, modem router, you can no longer define that device. They've even sent me brand new devices, and I can't configure those either because they're still picking up this old subnet ID that no longer exists.
Wait, you're saying that your Internet of Things outlet from Wise won't give up its old settings?
Exactly.
It gets stuck in those old settings and you can't
get
device.
I've deleted my account. I've deleted all sorts of cache. They've replaced the devices. And it still tries to configure basically an IP address that doesn't exist at all because of the subnet. That's another interesting thing I might point out. I configure subnets a little bit differently than most people. So my device is not using a default address. For instance, my VPN is 192.168.4.4, and the reason is very simple. Nobody thinks to ever hack into anything but a 1.1 type address. And if they do even try a different subnet, they always try a .1. So yep. From security, it's a smart thing to do if you have multiple subnets.
Well, with cloud services, this whole conversation of subnets is kind of moot, because if you're running devices that are reliant on services outside of your network, then they are not reliant on the network scheme of your home network. Now, this is a double-edged sword, because for right. folks that are not tech suave, but they want to have things like lights to control and doorbells and things of that nature, by subscribing to a cloud service, you can just set them up. Whereas if you're not using a cloud service, or there is no cloud service associated with the devices, then you're on your own to make it fit into your network scheme. To add to this, to make it more complicated, not that that's my job is to make it less complicated, but to make the issue more complicated so you wrap your head around the whole thing, we have severe security issues with Internet of Things devices. Yeah, every day we get more news on how easy it is for these devices to get hacked, how they're sending home the phone home of information they've gotten from your network. So from a security standpoint, I'm much more interested in setting things up manually myself than reliant on the cloud services. But it's a difficult call, because you have to have an ease of use when you buy these things. And right now the call is for you to have a separate network specifically for your Internet of Things. What that literally means to you folks is another Wi-Fi on your network. Now, you have your cable provider. It provides you with your current Wi-Fi, but off of that cable provider, you hook up another Wi-Fi system specifically for your Internet of Things devices. So it's separate and apart from what you use your network for. Your sign-ins for banking, and the kinds of activities you use your iPad for, your iPhone for, your computer for, should not travel the same roads that your refrigerator is on, that your security cameras are on, that your lights are on, and your doorbell are on, because that's become a very heavy security risk. So security experts
seem to be running on, you know, non-secured devices.
Say that again, Dave.
Most of the Internet of Things I've seen run in a non-secured mode, their transmissions.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why this is becoming the dominant suggestion for people at home and for corporations, is to have a separate network dedicated to non-secure devices, and to treat the Internet of Things devices as non-secure. But it gets really complicated when they're not associated with a cloud service. Because what the cloud service does is it allows you to do all those configurations and data acquisition. All of that happens out on the cloud. So the moment you connect the device, it doesn't matter whether it can see your network, the one you use for your iPad. What matters is that it can see the cloud and your iPad can see the cloud. So it makes setup much easier. However, you still have that cloud aspect of things. And if you're not interested in paying a monthly subscription service or being part of a cloud service, then it's much more complicated to get the security of a separate network, because you're going to have to make pass-throughs for that data to make it to your iPad or your laptop or your iPhone.
So can you tell me then why you can't secure your, for example, your refrigerator? Why can't that be secured?
It's a false premise. It absolutely can be secured. It's just the majority of products that are coming out on the market are not concerned about security, not to the extent they should be. And that's what we're learning. We're not learning that it's we're learning that it's haphazard. These $30 webcams on Amazon that are like Chinese knockoff products. They are not putting any research and development into software. In fact, we've had a number of Internet of Things devices show up with software that was literally cut and pasted from examples on the internet, not tailored to the device, because they can knock these things out so quickly and so cheaply. That's what we're dealing with capitalism again. And people are buying $20 security cameras. Well, there's no security in a security camera that costs you only $20. What we're learning is the same components that make the $100 security camera only cost, I don't know, $15. But the ingenuity, that's what you're paying for. That $85 extra is what you're paying for in software ingenuity. Some guarantee that there's some security that's been baked into it. And unfortunately, there's a lot of products out there that the ingenuity has not been put into security.
So you get what you pay for. That's what you're saying.
That's right, but it's even more convoluted than that. There's plenty of brand names selling junk. So you can't go to a Sony or a Samsung and assume that they put the ingenuity into the security of that product. If this was a concern of yours, you'd literally have to do the research to find out what kind of security that Internet of Things is. I'm tongue-tied because what I'm realizing as we talk is there is no standard for security for Internet of Things. That's the problem. The problem is we don't have an organizational body telling us how to do security correctly on the Internet of Things. And so there are some companies out there doing it really well, and a lot of companies that are just doing it quick and cheap.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I think the easiest answer to this question of how do I secure the Internet of Things is the separate network. Just run a separate network. Whenever you're thinking about a doorbell or a webcam that's supposed to be a security camera, which I always find really funny, that security cameras are not secure. Every one of these devices are actually a little computer in itself. It's a little server running in that device. It's actually not that little anymore in the scheme of things, because we can get so much in a little package. And we can build at such a cheap price now. It's hard to imagine that this little $20 security camera you bought so that you can watch the cats actually has enough power to run a web server that can compromise all the data in your network and send it all back home or to some mischievous address out there on the internet that was slid in during the production process. You know, that's this big hack that's happened here, across the internet. It's happened not at the manufacturer's point or at really your point where you have that equipment. And it's not you. When I say you're in schemes of this great hack that has happened, we're talking about government facilities, research facilities, corporate facilities, this software, this SolarWinds device, this Orion server is used by big corporations and big government to keep track of all their networks. Well, it got compromised back in March because the hackers got into the supply chain, the software supply chain. They were able to behave as though they were a software update. They were able to infect the update servers so that equipment out there in the wild, when it pulled for an update, it pulled what it thought was a secure certified update, and it was actually the hacker's code. And it made these managing servers they're an octopus. They're this web of services for government and for corporations, basically because they're not obscure. This is what you use. If you're a big organization like the federal government, this is what you use to manage your networks and make them secure. They targeted that software specifically. And all of a sudden, they've compromised large sections of the U.S. government by getting into the software supply chain. I obviously find that story so fascinating, I forgot the point I was making.
You're too young to have those problems.
Bye, guys.
See you, Judy.
Bye, Judy.
Bye.
I was just scrolling on the internet there, and on Facebook, I just saw two things. One, snow in Red Rock Canyon, which is in Henderson, just outside of Las Vegas, and like at the resort on their beach, on their poolside deck. And the other one was about testing being provided at the Hermosillo Airport for COVID, for people that want to travel and get their COVID tests, and the price and everything. I think it's on the forum page. What's up, San Carlos?
I saw that as well. That's great. They've told us where to go get the testing done that will be certified for air travel as far as the United States is concerned. I assume you are all paying attention to, we've reached that point now. You can't fly to the United States unless you've got a certification saying that you've gotten the vaccine or you're clean. You're clean. That's what it is.
You've been tested.
Did you see the sniffer dogs at the Hermosillo Airport?
Say that again, Dave.
The Hermosillo Airport is using sniffer dogs to detect COVID in a person. And if you check positive, then you have to get another test before boarding.
Oh, wow.
It's an experimental thing. They've got 5 dogs trained already.
I've been reading that the dogs can detect COVID better than the COVID tests.
They've got, I hadn't heard about that one.
They've got something like over 90% accuracy as far as sniffing out COVID.
That was different. Also, when you guys were talking about vaccinations and everything, Canada has hit a bit of a snag. The Pfizer vaccination plant that we have access to in Europe has been closed down because they are renovating to have a higher capacity. And during that, we in Canada are not receiving any more of the Pfizer vaccines. We've got a contract with them, but it's going to be delayed. So people that had their first shot with Pfizer are being asked to wait longer because we used up all of our doses on first shots instead of waiting some for second, because we thought that was the best plan. And now we're having a vaccination supply problem.
Wow. Because they can't get it to you.
Right. We're not getting the shipments. That's from Pfizer. Pfizer was our biggest contract, and the next one was the Moderna, and they're just in the process of trying to approve the other ones.
Well, have you guys had your shot?
No, we won't be until, I have friends and a couple of nursing friends that have had it, and somebody that's living in an assisted living. But we won't be eligible till maybe April. We don't know.
We have our appointments for February the 20th.
That's there in Green Valley, February the 20th. And Chester was telling us he got vaccinated the other day.
And Irving got his done.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And I got mine about 2 weeks
ago. Dave, are you in the 80. States or here in Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
Are you
in the VA? On super efficient. They were only doing 120 people a day when I did it. You registered, they called you, and then they bug you about making sure you show up. And they scheduled the second. In fact, just today I got a reminder for my second shot that's already scheduled in February.
Where is this?
The VA, Tucson.
Okay, well, we're getting it at the Kino Sports Complex. It's drive-through.
I've got an interesting COVID fact that you may or may not have heard before, but early on, I don't know if you've noticed, but the FDA has approved a different set of needles for administering the vaccine. Well, what's interesting is about, well, gosh, I've got a horrible head for the timeline now, the way things are going down. Maybe it was weeks ago, maybe it was a month ago, but Alaska had discovered that. They were giving out vaccines, and they discovered that when they got done with the recommended dosage, there was definitely at least another dose left in the containers. And they were the first ones to discover using smaller needles meant that they had more vaccine to distribute. And they got special permission at the time to give out those as additional vaccines. And then almost a month later, we see the FDA approve using smaller needles specifically for that, so that we can spread out the vaccine more. It's interesting to think that depending on the delivery technology you're using, you could just be tossing vaccine in the trash. Like that's what they were accounting for when they put dosages into a vial, is they were accounting for specific needle diameter that would allow an amount of vaccine residue to stay in the needle and be tossed in the trash. And Alaska just inadvertently ended up using smaller needles and discovering that they had more vaccine left to distribute. Thinner diameter.
It's too bad they didn't have pre-filled syringes. It would have worked out better.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I wonder if all that's been thought about. Who knows what's been thought about, the way you see this all shaken out, this monkey show.
I think in transporting and everything that it's easier to have it in a vial, you know, but yes, the technique used by the person doing it. For example, we had a first shot in Canada, and it was on the news, and it keeps being shown over and over again, and I get angry every time I see it. The woman obviously is an administrator, and she gets to do the big photo op, and I don't think she's given a needle in many years. She injects it into the person, and then she pulls it out, and it runs down the person's arm. It's Jeez. Just the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Like, get out of the chair and let a professional do it. You maybe were a nurse before you became an administrator, but is she just... Anyways,
her hand is shaking in that shot too. Another thing from CBC that we're getting is that Pfizer they produce their vaccine in Europe, and of course we have contracts with Pfizer, and it's all supposed to be on its way and so on. But they the government in Europe, the European Union, is saying that if you're producing it here, we got to get first crack at it. So even some of those contracts are in jeopardy because of the European Union. So, and Canada, we had a couple of prime ministers ago who just decided that pandemic preparedness wasn't high on his priority, and he decided to our government vaccine facility was sold. And of course, when we often have this in a branch economy that we have, somebody buys it, and the real purpose of it is just to close it, and that's what happens. So we don't really have a vaccine production facility in Canada now. So we're pretty much dependent on the world to give us their leftovers. I guess I don't know.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know what else is sad about listening to these stories is that I'm still riding high from a new American president, but politics and posturing never go away, do they? That's really what this is. This is people trying to puff themselves up and make themselves more important during this situation. It's politics, and it's just sad that that's what would be getting in the way of some of this stuff. Hey, we're running out of time, and there's at least one article that I want to share with you guys that I will put a link to that I just found really entertaining about the insurrectionists. If you have not heard this story yet, it's very humorous. Apparently, women are using the dating app Bumble to identify insurrectionists and identify them and send their personal data to the police so that they can be investigated. Apparently, a number of these people, very proud and chest pump, puffed out, took photos on their dating app, identifying them as in Washington, D.C. at the time, or even still right there at the Capitol, pictures in Trump hats and, you know, their memorabilia of trying to take over the government. Some women talk about changing their status. I don't know anything about the Bumble dating app, so I don't know what kind of granularity it has as far as searching out a perfect mate. But apparently you can set your political affiliation, and they intentionally switched to conservative so that they could get a whole slew of these potential mates. And they started going through the footage of what happened at the Capitol and looking for these people's pictures on the dating app. And when they'd identify them, then they would be reporting them to law enforcement. So I just thought that was a really funny way to use technology. And if you're
the FBI does the same thing, at least.
Say that again?
You got to hope the FBI might be doing the same thing.
Yeah, no, I would hope that that changed, it just created a whole new investigative path for these people. Pardon me. I'm just blown away by the amount of Instagram and Facebook posts and Twitter posts and I guess Parler posts. I'm not on Parler, but I assume that that's where the audacity to think that documenting your overthrowing the Capitol was going to be okay.
Well, Scott, they really did think they were going to succeed. They wanted to be first in line. You know, that's part of the problem. It wasn't that they, you know, thought, well, we're going to go in here and create some crimes and walk away. They thought they were going to be successful.
Well, I just don't believe that all of them thought that. I think some of them thought they were in a protest and it was a Trump thing. I think some of them thought they were in a reality TV show like the last 4 years. I honestly think there are people dumb enough to be there thinking they're exercising their First Amendment right and not realizing how much trouble they were going to get themselves in.
Did you hear about the guy, you know, the one that wore the horns and everything? He was absolutely shocked. Couldn't understand why Trump wouldn't pardon him. He was so sure he was going to get a pardon.
So was the Tiger King.
Yes.
You saw that he had a limo waiting outside the prison for when he got his pardon.
Yes. And now Giuliani and Powell are extremely surprised, I'm sure, to be finding that they're being sued for $1.3 million each from Dominion.
Billion.
Voting machines.
Billion.
Sorry. Billions. Yes.
He's being. Well, and I saw a headline that he's come out to say that Joe Biden is the legitimate president. I mean, after he's been hit with this suit, he's come out to say he was legitimately elected.
Who?
Giuliani.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. I mean, it's right after he's been hit with this suit, he's come out publicly to say that Biden was legitimately elected.
So there's still some lawyer in there.
Yeah. What else was funny? I saw on the Tonight Show that he's selling monumental coins, memento coins. I wonder if that's his plan to pay his fines, is to sell gold coins, minted gold coins.
He's probably dumb enough to sell them below cost.
Right. No.
He'll make it up in volume. That's the joke.
Yes, he'll make it up in volume. The only other thing I got is the inauguration and that young girl that's the poet laureate. She is phenomenal.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And she has a book that's coming out. It's not going to be released until September, but it's a children's book about change and how change happens and how children can be part of it. It sounds like a very interesting book. Boy, to hear her speak, she's had a few different interviews, but It's pretty cool.
She's been a public figure since she was about 14, though. Like, she started being an activist.
Okay. But, well, a poet, a writer, but she also has overcome a speech impediment. And just so many things, and the things that she says about writing and about words, expressing feelings, and she's just very inspirational.
Hey,
ahead, Bill.
I think we should also recognize the young climate activist. What's her name?
Greta Thunberg for
trolling Trump on the. Something about he seems such a sad man, or something along that. It was awesome. It was absolutely. And Trump doesn't have a way to respond.
Right.
Been God, doesn't platform. The world seem a lot more civilized with him not blasting every day?
What isn't that the truth? Every morning I wake up and I hear something reasonable being done by the U.S. government. I'm not used to that. I'm a little
shell shocked. What the hell's up with that? What's going on here? You guys actually came out from underneath the rock.
I find it interesting that the when they come out and talk the press conferences are boring again.
That's right.
I mean, it feels like a wasted hour watching them because it's boring.
You know what, I think back to when Obama got elected, and I remember the sentiment then, especially with people from my age, was anybody could be president. Before Obama got elected, we were at a point, we were so disappointed with our political leaders, that the last thing we wanted was a seasoned politician. You could be a rock star, and you would have a better chance of getting elected than a seasoned politician. Well, we found out that's a lot of horseshit. I don't think we're going back to that attitude anytime soon.
No, if you want a dentist, you don't hire a plumber, you know.
That's right. Thank you, reality, for waking me up.
Okay, guys. See you around.
Yeah. Hey, I got one more story before we go. I'll put it in the link in today's episode, but I thought you guys might appreciate this. It'll just take a moment. Have you heard of GitHub? GitHub is an open source community for developing software. It was on its own for a long time, recently bought by Microsoft. So Microsoft owns GitHub, but it functions as a separate entity. If you haven't heard of Discord is a messaging platform where people get together either in communities from their work or just communities of it's another open source community where you can get together and share information, share code, share pictures, share stuff like that. It's kind of like having a messaging. It's kind of like having a WhatsApp group. So the story is a Jewish employee was fired from GitHub for warning that the Nazis are coming on the day of the insurrection, and he has just been given his job back. If you read the Discord messages, it's obvious his tone is, look at the fascists, here come the Nazis. But they took it as being, as him inciting people and fired him from his job. And when they went back and reviewed the conversations, they decided they were wrong and gave him his job. I don't know if I would want to go back to working for a place where they could make that kind of mistake without paying attention to the context. But he is being offered his job back. And there is more details in the article, and I will put a link to it on the website for today's meeting. I think it's very interesting reading. It's a good, well, there's nothing good about it, but it's a sign of where we're still at in our country.
Cool. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for being here, okay. Jim. Bill, did you
okay,
have something
Scott,
to
add? I got one more technical question. Cheryl is getting to the point where she's going to, you know, make her iPad into a photo viewer.
Okay.
What was your iPad recommendation?
Yeah, as far as an app to use?
No. To buy a new one, a replacement. You went on for a half hour of being overjoyed.
It is the iPad. See you,
Jim. iPad what?
Jim's out of here. It is the iPad. There is the iPad and the iPad Pro.
And you said something about, you had some prices about the 120 gig or something?
Okay, so the iPad line, the base model starts with 32 gigabytes.
Right.
That's $329. I don't recommend that one. The one that starts at $429 has 128 gigabytes of space in it. And that's the one that I think that for $100 to get so much more, that is a more future-proofed purchase. Because when you buy one of these devices, hell, if you buy any Mac device right now, you can't upgrade any of this stuff. The new M1 chips, the RAM and the storage are all integrated into the silicon. So you have to know ahead of time how much you think you might need down the line. I personally would pay $100 more for a device that has that much more storage in it. That is, what is that? That's four times the storage for $100 more.
Okay, so but do you recommend the iPad with that amount of storage over a Chromebook or any of the other platforms?
Well, the Chromebooks are heavier. They are cheaper, but they don't have as much storage. When you start comparing the iPads to the Chromebooks to get the same performance storage package, it's actually cheaper in the iPad. So like the iPad compared to Android tablets, there's a lot of cheaper tablets out there. But when you compare it to the Chromebook, that 128 gigabytes of storage, the processing power, as well as the ecosystem you're in, the iPad actually ends up cheaper than the Chromebook equivalent.
Okay. And the same thing goes for Amazon tablets and different things like that. Like, you still think that the iPad is the best?
If you're looking for a tablet, you're not looking at the Amazon tablets. I mean, if you're really looking to do work with a tablet, that iPad, they've got it all dialed in. That's why it's an easy recommendation. They've got the ecosystem. They've got the proven apps. One of the things, I mean, if you need arguments for why, one of the things that always comes back to me is how little tablet development is actually done in Android. Most of the tablet apps in Android are Android phone apps that have been blown up to that bigger screen size. That's not the case in the Apple world. In the Apple world, you take an app that was made for the phone, and they've had developers developing it on the iPad as well. So it's a different experience. It's intended for that larger screen experience. The Android ecosystem just doesn't work that way. There isn't enough people caring that much. So most of the tablet apps that you run on an Android tablet have been, they're just phone apps that have just gotten bigger on that screen. And that's not a pleasant experience.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's a really big thing. You also can't get that A12 Bionic processor that's in there. We're not getting that kind of power out of the Qualcomm chips that are offered on most of the discount Android tablets. That is a much more powerful processor. It's better on battery life. It can do more. You can do video editing on it. You can do these real kind of desktop activities with them. Now, let me qualify that by saying, if your goal is to replace a desktop or a laptop computer, if you're a video editor, you're not looking at the iPad. You're looking at the iPad Pro, because everything that I just said is true, but more with the iPad Pro.
But the iPad Pro is more at the same price range as the laptops.
That's right. Yeah. And so how would you say it? You're getting into there. That price range is a difficult thing to play with. The iPad Pro, I think, what is it now? It's $12.99 or $13.99. The iPad Pro is a more powerful computer in most of the PC market than the PCs being sold at that price point because of the chip that's in the iPad Pro. But what you're dealing with is what's available in that Pro package. You need to be an Adobe person to appreciate why you're doing it on the Pro, because they've built the software for the Pro. But there may be stuff on the laptop that you need to do as well. As a professional, there may be stuff on the laptop that you need to be able to do that is not available on the iPad ecosystem. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you're compromising power for compatibility because you're a professional. And there's a lot less of that compromise going on these days than there was when the Pro first got released. I find if you get up into the Pro, then you really are. There's nuances in the market that you're comparing. But if you're a person that's looking for a tablet, you're going to do tablet stuff. Tablet stuff to me is I'm going to watch Netflix videos. I'm going to read the Wall Street Journal. I'm going to draw some pictures. I like to sketch, and I'm going to do some sketching. The device, I'm gonna use it on an airplane without worrying about plugging it in. These are all, to me, just basic tablet user stuff these days. And you can't beat that iPad. It's the best choice for its price. But if you're a professional, that's a different deal. If you're building animations, if you're editing video clips, if your job relies on that. I'm just realizing I've had this speaker monitor on the whole time we've had this meeting. I hope that hasn't been in the background of my conversation. I typically turn it off. It's BB that's the loudest on it, so she's sitting right next to me. I didn't even notice that I still had the monitor on. Anyway, I hope that gives you some insight into my thinking when I'm thinking about these devices. That's really the reason that I think the iPad is kind of a no-brainer. If somebody comes to me saying, I want a tablet, and they're not a professional, they're just a consumer, you can't beat that new iPad tablet.
So, Scott, I'm just looking at Costco, actually.
Yeah.
And you can get you can go up to a 256 gig, I believe. Is that right?
On the iPad?
Let's see. Fourth gen iPad. Oh, no, that's an iPad Air. I'm sorry.
And I don't think they make the Air anymore. Let me double check here.
Jim, you're muted. You're saying something, Jim, and you're muted.
I'm just shaking my head and moving my lips. No, I don't think they make the Air anymore.
Yeah.
Costco the other day.
Yeah, I think they're selling the Air, but I don't think they've done any update to the Air, and I think that they're just selling off what they've still got.
Okay, I'm just looking at their price list. You're right. The 8th Gen Apple iPad, 128 gig. In Canadian mini dollars is $399.
That's like Monopoly money, right? Is that expensive?
Yeah, it's Monopoly money, exactly. Yeah, you guys print it down there on your photocopiers. The 32 gig is $319, so it's $80 more for the 128. And they only go to a 128, is that correct?
Well, hey, I lie. There is an iPad Air I'm looking at Apple right now, and they've got a new Air for $600. I don't know if I want to put $600 into a tablet. But it's got Wi-Fi 6 and USB-C and a 12-megapixel camera with a 7-megapixel selfie camera. And here we go. This has the A14 chip in it, which is one of their latest chips. Wow, I thought for sure they were done with the Air.
Yeah, that's what they told me at the store when I was looking for them.
Apple, you know, it's frustrating to share information from Apple because they lie to us all the time. They absolutely do not. They don't know what's going on until it's happening.
So should we go to Apple, or are we okay buying from Costco or buying from different places?
Apple doesn't care where you buy their equipment. They honor the same warranty. They will disown you if it's out of warranty, and they'll help you profusely if it is. And it doesn't matter where you bought it. You could buy it at AT&T. You could buy it at Cox. You could buy it at Best Buy or from Costco. It just, it would not matter. I'm looking at this because now that that's changed, I got to double check to make sure the, yeah, that's, so that is a really big difference between the Air and the iPad is it's got the,
new chip.
Yeah, it's, well, it's got the chip that was in the latest iPhones, the A14 Bionic chip, or not the latest, but the, I think it was the iPhones just before this last year. The iPhone 11, I think, is the A14 chip. So that warrants paying more money. I don't know if that warrants you having a different experience. It's also using the footprint. It's got less bezels on it, so it's the footprint of the Air Pro. Which means you can use that new keyboard and smart keyboard folio, that one that props it up. I don't know if that would be a big deal. But the price difference is still, it's insane. It's the starting price is $599 for the Air and $329 for the iPad. And I don't know if that, and I'm talking starting prices because it's just easy to compare them. But I don't know if that justifies $270 more.
So tell me again, the iPad that I should be looking at, I got the 128, and is there a version? And what's that other thing you keep saying, A12 or something?
A12 is the name of the chip that's in it.
A12 chip, okay.
A12 chip. And it's compatible with the Apple Pencil first generation. I didn't realize there was a second generation now, but so it's compatible. The iPads were never compatible with their stylus until recently, and now you're able to use their first generation stylus on the iPad,
which is another $80.
Yeah, or $100. probably $150 in Canadian money.
We saw one at Costco the other day. It was $79 for the.
Oh, okay.
Okay. The iPad second generation in Canadian dollars is $125. The iPad first generation, iPencil first generation is $95. So it's $30 difference.
Oh, okay. And that first generation is what it says on the site here is the only thing compatible. That second generation is compatible with the Air and the Pro.
So A12 chip, 128 gig. What else was the, like, is there a generation or something?
Well, it's the eighth generation iPad, but it's just the newest one. You know what? That's the thing you need to watch out for buying it from anyone but Apple. Because okay. Apple won't sell their previous generations, but all those other shops we talked about will. So you need to be aware of which, if you buy it from Costco, you need to be aware of which generation you're buying.
So I need 8th generation, 128 gig, A12 chip. Is there anything else I need?
No, I don't think there's any other information you need to know.
Wait a minute, Scott.
Yeah.
No, is it 4th generation iPad Air? It says the new 4th generation iPad Air.
Is it 4th? Where did I get 8?
It says 4th. It said 4.
Yeah, but you're talking Air. I want to know the iPad generation.
Hold on a second. Let me find out. Now I'm all confused, and I need to find out what generation.
Oh, now you're confused. Now we're in trouble.
Yeah, it's the 8th generation iPad. Maybe it's the 4th generation iPad Air, but it's the 8th generation iPad.
Yeah.
I just found Apple's press release for it. Apple introduces 8th generation iPad with huge jump in performance.
Okay.
That's the iPad. And what's the generation number for the iPad Air?
I don't know. Let me find out.
You don't know.
iPad Air generation list. Apple makes 4 different iPad models. The Air is on the 4th generation. The Mini's on the 5th. The iPad is on the 8th. I don't see the Pro here.
Doesn't matter. I'm not talking about the Pro. Just the iPad Air.
Why?
because I want to.
Wait.
Good day, everyone. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome, Irving. We'll see you next week. Bye, thanks Irving. For being here.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Au revoir.
So I have another question, but I just forgot what it was.
Well, I'm going to put a link to this Business Insider's article from 2020, September 2020. It breaks down each one of the iPads that are being sold right now.
Okay. We will sit down and do some homework. Then.
Yeah. Oh. What I would say is you don't want the base unit of the iPad because it's only got 32 gigabytes. So I think
32
gig. Yeah. So I think that your budgeting is around $430 American.
So the iOS... That was the one I wanted to know. What iOS should we be getting with it?
Oh, the latest. You'll get the latest iOS for at least the following 3 to 5 years. If you're if they change the way they do things, maybe they'll do it like the laptops and get it all the way up to 7 years. But right now, they have a reputation for providing updates 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so the question is what iOS upgrades will be available?
Yeah, Cheryl, what I'm saying is all of them. All of the iOS update. If you buy a brand new 8th generation iPad right now, you're going to get all the updates for the next 3 to 5 years. So whatever comes out over the next 3 to 5 years is going to instantly be compatible with it. It's after you hit that 3-year mark, it gets a little iffy just because of the way they've done things in the past. But I feel like they've been guaranteeing up to 5 years most recently. And then what I've noticed with their laptops is they've pretty much guaranteed at least 7 years back. There are certain computers that may not have applied to at certain points in the past, but at the moment, it feels like Big Sur is available on computers that are as old as 7 years old.
Is Big Sur an iOS?
No, that's for your MacBook, your MacBook Air, your MacBook Pro, your iMacs, your Macintosh Pro. Those are all desktop computers or laptop PC type computers. And those if you've got one of those and it's within 7 years, it's compatible with the latest operating system, Big Sur.
Okay, so it compares like to Windows 10.
That's right.
Okay, I think we know what we're looking for.
All right.
Last time, when I bought my Dell,
yeah.
We didn't ask you. And the day after, I was sitting at my first computer club, and you're talking to somebody about what not to buy. And there I am, sitting with my Dell right in front of you.
So. Well, truthfully, that must have been unusual circumstances. Dell has been a recommendation for years.
I'm wrong. HP.
There you go. That's the one to stay away from.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm looking at it. It's an HP. Yes. HP.
And you know what? Tech reviewists praise the HP devices these days. They say they've turned the corner, that they're doing innovative devices and they're... I mean, I want to make a comment about durability, but the truth is they've pulled out all the different things that could have gone wrong with it. They've pulled out the moving parts. They've made the computer without disk drives, without an optical drive. Well, that's one less thing to break down. They've made the computer more enclosed so its cooling system doesn't get as much dust in it. So these are innovations that have been made across the line, and I almost feel like by default they've built a better product. Their hinges used to break. Well, their hinges don't break as often anymore, but they make lighter computers because all this other junk isn't in there anymore, so there's less opportunities for their hinge to break. But you know what I've seen their power supplies go bad. You can't make that up. It's like you could build a better power supply. Out of all the computers that we have come through our office, HP is the one where you're buying a new power supply for it more often. They have fragile power supplies. So I feel like HP still cuts corners on the things they can cut corners on, and it ends up trickling down to your experience. I know there's good. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pop.
Well, you had me buy an HP.
No, no, you bought an HP. Okay. I didn't have you buy it.
But you said it was you wouldn't recommend it, but it was the best deal I could get right there or something like that. And anyway, I've had great luck with it. I don't know how long ago we bought that. I bought that. But I actually need to talk to you about doing a checkup on it.
Okay.
I'm just having little weird experiences. But overall, I'm still having great service with it after, what do you figure, 6 or 7 years or something like that?
And Terry, the same thing happened here. Scott hooked up to Bill's computer that he's been having problems with, was working on it. And while he was hooked up to our system, I had him look at the HP, which shone way above.
Okay, Scott, I remembered something else I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
I re-imaged the Acer that we that you were working on, the new machine. Wiped it out completely.
And you got a new power supply for it too.
And, well, yeah, that was the power supply just quit. I mean, it's kind of a random thing. But
I'm surprised it's not an HP, but go ahead.
The thing is, I'm running both of these machines side by side. The old machine runs video, like Stremio, no problem at all. It runs it and loads videos quite nicely. The new one, not so much. If you give it a video, it stutters and it loads, and it's just not a good experience, in their words. But when it comes to something like Facebook, cruising through Facebook, it performs better than the old one. The Facebook stuff loads really, really nice. Now, I sort of thought, well, maybe this is a graphics machine problem, like a graphics card machine problem. I don't know. When you start loading it up with video, it stutters, but it runs everything else faster.
Well, you know, if I remember right, the chip. And I think you're right. You're on the right track. I think it's a CPU or GPU related issue. But the chip that you have in that Asus, if I remember right, is a...
No, they're both Acers.
An Acer. Okay. If I remember right, you're talking about the one I was in taking a look at.
Yes,
The kind of CPU you have is one of those that is dialing up and down the performance of that chip.
Yes, and exactly.
It may be doing that more efficiently than the older CPU used to do to try and give you better battery life, but it's compromised on its ability to process things like video. I mean, I think you're on the right track. I'm just wondering if it's more like you need to compromise your expectations because of what it is. You may be able to... Set it in a high power mode. I actually change my laptop over to high powered mode when we do this, because I want the CPU pumping at its highest level as we're bringing in video and I'm bringing up web pages. I want as little performance interference with doing this meeting as possible. But then the rest of the week, I set it back down into this balanced power profile. Because I don't want the fans spinning all the time. That wears out the cooling system.
How do I try that out? How do I set the speed up, the performance up?
Well, what you could look in the mobility options on your taskbar. There's a battery showing that you're plugged in. With the right mouse button, if you click on that, where did my battery go? And you should get a white menu that says Power Options and Windows Mobility Center.
Yes, Power Options, yeah.
Okay, so if you go into the Mobility Center, you can quickly switch under the battery status. There's a pull down.
Oh, yeah, okay. Power Saver, High Performance.
Yeah, and so right there, you can very quickly change between the two.
All right, I just did. Oh, God, it's smoking.
Well, and you can monitor it with the task manager.
Yes, I've been running it pretty. It sits on my bar here, the task manager.
And so you should be able to see your CPU speed crank up. I think it goes up to 2.2 gigahertz or 2.5 gigahertz.
Yeah, it run when it's sitting idle, it's usually running at a 2.18 or whatever.
Well, that's already faster than when we were using it before. You remember we were down at like 1.6.
Well, it will drop there. If I run video, it'll drop down to 1.1, 1.6. You know, it does drop.
Well, it shouldn't. That's weird. I wonder why it would do that.
Well, it'll max out. The CPU will go to 100% and it'll sit there.
Right, but it's when you're running video, you should be like 2.2, 2.5. 100% is fine.
It's running at 2.18 right now, and it's 32% CPU. Yeah. I'll play with it. I'll run it here now. I'll see whether it made any difference on the video.
You might also look on Acer under that laptop. Acer may have their own power scheme for your model. There are certain computers I've found using Windows power scheme isn't efficient. You actually need a power scheme that some engineer took the time to set all the settings. That's all a power scheme is it's a blanket of settings that have been tailored for that. For that environment.
I'm gonna give it back to you again. I need to go get ready.
Are you talking to us, Pop?
No,
I'm sorry. No, I didn't have my mute on. Anyway, Scott, sometime next week, maybe you could find a time to take a look at my computer.
Sure.
Sorry to interrupt you guys.
Yeah, no problem. I'm sorry, guys. I'd love to keep talking, but I've got to give up this time. I'm already way late. Jim, it's good to see you. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week. Bill, Cheryl, Pop, I'm so glad you guys can always join us.
Au revoir.
Goodbye, all.
Bye-bye.
Until next week, tech on.
Tech on.